Check. Hey, hey, hi, hello. Are we good? I think we're good. Okay. What's up, everyone? It's Matt back in it with another podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today here, whatever, wherever you are. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for coming back. If you're coming back, all the things I say every time that I swear I'm never going to say again, you know how it is. I just ate a whole bunch of Oreos, so I'm like, I'm on a good one right now. You know what I mean? This is just, okay, to the people of Oreo, or not even just Oreo, but like people in like food marketing and stuff, like, will you stop marking like the packages as family size? You know, like, I don't know, as a singular person buying a family size pack of Oreos and then comfortably eating it, like, you're just really kind of, you know, adding to the guilt and the shame by, you know, suggesting that that portion size was recommended for an entire family unit. And then here I am just on my own, you know, having no problem eating them. I don't know. It's just, I guess I could just buy a smaller one or maybe just eat less. I don't know, but I don't, just, you know what I'm saying though. I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Enough about the Oreos. today. Okay. This is what I'm talking about today. Something that is very near and dear to my heart that I talk about a lot. It's one of my favorite things to, you know, reminisce and talk about with people. And that is heavy music. That's right. Heavy music, breakdowns, the yelling, the screaming, all that stuff. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. And I'm kind of like, I've been in like a little sort of nostalgic type vibe lately, which I'll explain. But like, I don't know. Yeah, this is something an idea I had. And then I was like, oh, that'd be kind of fun and kind of cool. And it's something I like. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking music. I don't know. Thank you so much for listening, keeping up with the podcast, all that stuff. I don't know. Thank you so much. Let's get into it. Good, and we're going, and okay, all right. So as I was saying, or was it, yeah, I was just saying that I've been kind of in this, like, I don't know, started off the year in sort of like this old kind of nostalgic vibe, because I went and saw Poison the Well earlier this year, so at the Anaheim House of Blues. It was January 6th of all dates, but Poison the Well is doing a 20-year anniversary tour for their album You Come Before You. They're touring for the album, where they play the album in full every night, but they also, like, you know, mix in the hits and stuff like that. And the show was amazing. They were great. Terror, another Los Angeles... Well, a Los Angeles, I mean, Poison Well's from Florida, but like Terror, hardcore band from Los Angeles, they opened the show, but they're another old school kind of band. But there's like a handful of bands that just, like, the name alone just really brings me back to a time and a place. And like, particularly these ones that were kind of like in the early days of me getting into heavy music. And Poison the Well is one of them. And Terror, too, even though Terror came a little bit later for me. But Poison the Well was, like, just one of those bands that, like, when I first was getting into underground, whatever, hardcore and metal, they were, like, one of their first bands I started listening to. And so they're just a very nostalgic kind of band for me. Very time and a place, like... early high school, early 2000s, you know, era. And so they always bring me back to that time. And so seeing them live, you know, 20 years later. I'd seen them before a few years ago at the Glass House in Pomona, but they were just they were an opener. I think they were opening for Norma Jean, if I remember correctly. I think it was Norma Jean. And their set was great, and it was cool, and I was stoked to see them because I had never seen them back in the earlier days. But this show they just played in January of 2024, You Come Before You 20 Anniversary Tour, was amazing. I mean, just they sounded great. The set list was great. Like, the show was just glorious. It was glorious, I'll say. And yeah, you know, so that, and plus with Terror, another band, like I said, that was kind of like in my early days of hardcore, just, you know, gets me reminiscing and thinking about all these bands. And yeah, I was like, oh, it might be kind of cool. I kind of wanted to talk about some of those bands that were like gateways for me into hardcore music. And then, yeah, they're also just, they're very like nostalgic. You know what I mean? I don't know. So I've narrowed it down to like, I don't know, a top 10, I guess, even though they're not really in a particular, like, they're not necessarily in order. They're just like kind of 10 of like the main or bigger bands that really I was into. But they're not in any, they're not ranked according to significance, except for number one, which is like the band that really started it all for me. But I'll get to that when I get to that, because before once I started thinking about all these bands and, you know, scrolling through my iTunes, it all starts to come back and you're like, oh yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you start remembering how many, you know, all these early bands. And so, yeah, there was a lot more than like the 10 or whatever. So I just wanted to throw some other ones out there because, yeah, these were also other bands that I really liked and remind me of the early days. So, yeah, just a quick, like, backstory. I had said this before, I think maybe on my Blink 182 podcast, maybe. I don't really know, but, like, I was, once I got into music, I was pretty much all into music. So, like, but I started, like, when I got into music when I was, like, 9 or 10, it was already, like, alternative-type bands, if that makes sense. So it was, like, I mean, not, like, Nirvana or anything, but, like, you know, this is, like, the late 90s. So, like, Blink-182 was obviously a big one, but I liked Green Day a lot. I was actually into Green Day, if I remember correctly, before Blink. Because of Dookie, which was 1994, and I didn't really get into Blink until about 98, maybe 97 or 98. So I was into Green Day, Blink, like Weezer, you know, like No Doubt. I was really big into No Doubt. So like just those kind of bands. I was already into music and like alternative music, meaning, I mean, these were all like radio bands, but you know what I mean? Like the genre, like the kind of punk rock genre, whatever you want to call it. And that's what kind of led me into music. And then from there, I got into a little, like, I don't even want to say heavier, but like more alternative underground bands. So like Finch, when they came out in the early 2000s, like Boxcar Racer, just because I was into Blink, that was a side project. But, you know, Boxcar Racer is a little heavier than Blink was. So I started kind of going down that route of like, you know, okay, now I'm getting in a little more into like kind of the underground, you know, punk heavier bands. But then there was a pivotal moment, which I'll share when I get there. But like that kind of sent me down the rabbit hole of hardcore, metal, punk music, the underground scene, whatever, which came, that was probably around 2001 or two, maybe 2001, I was in high school. Okay, I don't want to date myself here, but like 2001, I was going into my sophomore year of high school, I think. So it was probably like 2002, maybe. we'll say 2002 is kind of when it all, 2001, 2002, all right, is when I got started getting into the music. And yeah, I don't, this is a long winded way of getting around it, but that's kind of when I, so, you know, obviously hardcore and metal already existed then, or this generation of it at least. So these were just some of the earlier bands, some of the first bands I got into, but like the honorable mentions. So they did not, you know, make the top 10, even though it's not really a top 10, like I said, but like, I'm sorry. But these are just kind of the honorable mention type bands. So that just bring me back to that early days of discovering this whole underground kind of scene of music. So yeah, I'm just going to go through a few of these. All right. So we're going to start with actually one, which is still a pretty significant band to me. Well, in my heart, at least, because it was the first show I ever went to. And that was Stretch Armstrong. They are a, I don't know what, whatever you want to call it. Again, genres, fucking, I don't know. But like, they're kind of like a punk, hardcore punk band from South Carolina. And we used to listen to that, me and my friends, like, who were also into this music, would listen to them quite a lot, particularly their album A Revolution Transmission, which has their big hit For the Record on it. We were obsessed with that song, loved that album. Rituals of Life, another great album by them, and their first album, Compassion Fills the Void. Those were the early kind of Stretch Armstrong albums that really got me into, like, I don't know, heavier punk music, I guess you want to call it, whatever. But yeah, so Stretch Armstrong, definitely an honorable mention. Okay, so I need to keep track of all these now that I'm like rattling them off. Okay. Another band from around this time would be AFI. I mean, come on, people. What do we even need to say about AFI at this point? Legendary punk band, from Northern California. We listen to them a lot. This one, again, really brings me back to the day. Yeah, anyway. If you don't know, AFI started in, like, I don't know, maybe the early 90s, I guess, I would say. They were basically a straight-up kind of punk band. They've evolved, obviously, a lot over the years. Yeah, we went through our phase, you know, our whole, like, fucking sellout phase. But I've learned to love them now in my, you know, in my older years. So it's all good. But early 2000s and late 90s, early 2000s, AFI, in particular, Black Sails in the Sunset and The Art of Drowning, was obsessed with those albums. I mean, The Art of Drowning is, like, near perfection. I mean, that album is amazing. I would highly recommend that to come out, I would highly recommend anybody check that one out. If you've never listened to that album, it's amazing. It came out in good old Y2K. Yeah, it's so catchy, so damn good. That album was on constant repeat. So, yeah, loved AFI. That was another band, kind of that punk vibe that, yeah, I don't know, we got really into back in the day. So yeah, AFI, definitely a good one. Gosh, there's some, okay, I need to go, I don't know. Evergreen Terrace was another big one. They're a hardcore band from Florida. This was another band that, like, really reminds me of the early 2000s and just my early days of hardcore music. In particular, for them, their first album, Losing All Hope Is Freedom, we do, again, another album that was on heavy rotation. Really good album, highly recommend it. Their next album as well, Burned Alive by Time, was also really good. Yeah, but particularly their first album, check it out. Again, I mean, just so I don't have to say this every time, I recommend you listen to all these albums. Like, they're all good. I don't know. They're just very, yeah, personal, kind of nostalgic albums for me. So another good one, Losing All Hope Is Freedom from Evergreen Terrace. Okay, who else we got on here? Yeah, I don't even know where to go. Okay, well, I'll just, since we're in Florida, you know, right now, there's another band. This band actually also takes me back. And this is a band called Shai Hulud, which was another hardcore metal band from Florida. Yeah, this band, like, I can still picture their burned CD in my, like, CD book thing, you know? Like, I can still see it in my mind. Like, had a couple of their albums, early albums, in particular, their second album, which is called That Within Blood, Ill-Tempered, that came out in 2003. But yeah, I remember having this CD burned and listening to it in my car all the time. They had another early album called Hearts. What is it called? Let me look. I might have to look this one up. It's been a while. Hearts Once Nourished with Hope and Compassion was their first album. Another pretty solid album. But I didn't, that one doesn't hit as much as the second album for me. But again, just another good early, Shai Hulud always makes me think of, again, my first car and a burned CD. Like, you know what I mean? Like that one, they really take me back. So Shai Hulud had to be on the list. Fuck, okay. I feel like I'm spending too much. I don't even care. Whatever. Another band. Okay, now I just don't know which one to choose. Okay. I'm actually just going to start with this band because this band to me is actually like, I don't know how to even say it, but like they're actually still pretty legendary in the scene, but it's particularly because of this one album. And that is none other than the Scene Kings, Norma Jean. Yeah. To me, I mean, again, Norma Jean, I remember, like, when this album was, like, new. You know what I mean? So their first album, I still think is honestly, like, a hardcore, whatever, metalcore, like, masterpiece. It was so monumental in the scene. I remember when it was new and people were like obsessed with it and like it was heavy and it was catchy and it was just crazy. That album still, I would honestly put it into like the iconic like album like category. That's Norma Jean's first album, Bless the Martyr and Kiss the Child. Another super nostalgic album for me. And I've seen Norma Jean a few times over the years, but I didn't see them till later. And if for anybody who just doesn't know, Josh Scogan, who was the singer of Norma Jean, who like, you know, was on that album, he left Norma Jean after that first album. He went on to create another band that I actually really love, The Chariot. But so he left Norma Jean like right after that album came out. And so they replaced, you know, they got a new singer, and I do like Norma Jean over the years, but to me, just nothing really compares to that first album. It is like a moment in my head. Just, it's a moment in the scene. It's a moment for the music. It's just, when I think of that album, I think of like, literally like skinny jeans and the white studded belts and like Scene hair, you know what I mean? And like extra small t-shirts. Like, they were just the embodiment of early 2000s Scene, hardcore, whatever you want to call it. But that album, I think, is truly, like, monumental, and I still love it to this day. And, yeah, I don't know, man. Norma Jean, fucking solid album. Yeah, love it. They take me back just to a very specific time with my friends hanging out in the height kind of our, you know, whatever you want to call it, our scene years, our blunder years, you know what I mean? Anyway, yeah, love that album. Okay, a couple more here. Another hardcore band, Remembering Never. If you know, you know. Women and Children Die First was like, I don't know, a later album, I guess, but it was still, that one always reminds me of just my early scene years, early hardcore years. Really solid album, great band. This one again takes me back, is the Black Dahlia Murder. So, had to put them on the list, even though I was actually never a huge Black Dahlia fan. I just remember like listening to them with my friends all the time because they were so freaking heavy, heavy as hell band, straight up metal, whatever. And yeah, their first album, Unhallowed, yeah, Unhallowed was very big again in our circle. And even though I was never a huge Black Dahlia fan, they did play in Slow once, maybe twice actually. And they remind me of the old days, you know what I mean? So, I had to include them on here. Okay, where else are we going here? Okay, I might just rattle through the rest of these. Terror, like I mentioned, Los Angeles hardcore band. Even though, like, I didn't get into Terror until, like, a couple years into my hardcore career, their first album, One with the Underdogs, came out the year I graduated high school, 20 years ago, 2004, so... And I remember when I finally started like listening to them more and kind of getting into their music a little bit more. But again, they're like a legendary hardcore band. So yeah. But anyway, they were kind of towards like the later end of my early nostalgic period, but they were in there. I'll put them in there just cause I love them. okay. A couple other bands. Where are we going to go with this one? Another local to California, Light This City. They were sort of like an underground metal band. I mean, they were kind of big, I guess, but like, yeah, we like had a lot of mutual friends with them and they played in San Luis a lot. But their first album, The Hero Cycle, is fucking great. I loved that album. Still love it to this day. So, yeah, anyway, they were just, I don't know, what do you want to call it, metal. Okay, Light the City. HIMSA, shout out to HIMSA, straight out of Seattle, Washington. Yeah, another, like, very nostalgic high school era band that I liked a lot. For them in particular, it was their second album. Courting Tragedy and Disaster is the name of that album. And that one, you know that The Girl in Glass, come on people. That was like one of the big singles off of A Girl in Glass. Yeah. They played in Slow once, Slow Brew downtown. Yeah. I think that was the only time I ever saw them actually, but was big into HIMSA. Love them. They bring me back for sure. Okay, and then another one which almost made the list. This will be the last one, I think, for the honorable mentions. They almost made the list, but I just didn't quite, I don't know. I ended up not putting them on the main list, but that is another kind of like, I don't know what you want to call it, metalcore band, I guess, and that would be Unearth. Yeah, Unearth was another early era heavy band that I got into. In particular for them, their first album, The Stings of Conscience, which came out in 2001. Absolutely loved that album. We played that one a lot. Unearth played in Slow. Like, I think they played at Slow Brew as well, if I remember. That album came out in 2001, so yeah, that was another early era album that I liked, and it's just crazy to think that that came out 23 years ago. It's kind of scary, but yeah, Unearth was another big, heavy band that kind of got me into, well, not like I was already into, but you know what I mean, like, just another early 2000s heavy band that was kind of in those early years of listening to music. So okay, those were the honorable mentions. Those were just bands that, like, I wanted to include and wanted to talk about for just a minute, or maybe a few minutes, I guess. But okay, those were the honorable mentions, all bands that were kind of in on the early days. But now we're going to get into, like, the real, you know, like, the heavy hitters of my early hardcore years, and bands that really just capture that nostalgia for me, of the early 2000s in particular. So kind of like my teen years, my high school years. Yeah, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I've said too much. Okay, so now, yeah, let's get into the top 10. Okay, here we go. And again, for these, like, these particular 10, they're not really in any order of significance except for number one. But otherwise, they're just, like, I don't know, they're just the ones I thought were the most kind of nostalgic, and the ones, like, I would typically probably listen to the most during that time, but they're not in any order of significance. Okay, so just remember that these are just 10 nostalgic bands of mine for my early days in the hardcore scene. All right, so that's what we're doing here. And we're gonna start off number 10 with some SoCal natives, straight out of the OC, baby, and that is a band called Bleeding Through. Big metalcore band in the scene, and yeah, I remember listening to them a lot. In particular, it wasn't their first album. When was it? It was their first big album, I'll put it that way. Well, in my opinion, I guess. I'm sure the diehards out there, you know, might think that they actually, you know, their other ones were good, but you know what I'm saying. And that was an album of theirs from 2003 called This Is Love, This Is Murderous. Again, it, to me, that's just a big kind of, like, staple album, like, for them personally, but also just in the music scene in general. It's got all the famous song, There Was a Firefight, like, everybody knows that, you know what I mean. But yeah, this album was very big in our circle, and yeah, Bleeding Through just reminds me a lot of my early days in the music. And I just, again, I was still in high school, so, like, I don't know, they just always stand out in particular as one of those early bands that I got into, and then just that I listened to a lot. And yeah, we thought they were heavy, but they were still catchy. They kind of have those, like, melodic, you know, moments in the album. And of course, I mean, let's just be real here. You know, they got Marta in the band. Y'all know what I mean, you know? Yeah, she was there, or she, I mean, they're still a band, I guess. So she is their synth player. She does all the keyboards, and I mean, she's just a metal babe. So we, you know, well, I guess I'll just speak for myself, but I liked her, you know what I mean? And yeah, they just, I don't know, that era, they just remind me definitely of my early days of hardcore music. So big shout out to Bleeding Through. Saw them, I mean, I've seen them a bunch over the years now, but I remember in particular, we saw them one time in Santa Barbara, which we would rarely go to Santa Barbara. I think that might be the only show, actually, I ever went to Santa Barbara for. Like, we were going to Ventura all the time in Hollywood, but Yeah, I remember bleeding through right around this time, probably 2004 or 5 would be my guess. Bleeding Through played Santa Barbara, and I think it was with Misery Signals, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to look that one up, but yeah, I think it was Bleeding Through and Misery Signals. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's who it was. Right around this time, and yeah, I had a Bleeding Through shirt. I think I got from that show. It had like a big red like bird on it, I guess. I don't know. It was kind of like an abstract bird, you know what I mean? But yeah. Because again, I used to get a lot of my shirts at the shows because, you know, there was like Interpunk and stuff. Like, you could buy shirts online, but this is 2003 we're talking about, you know? So it's like online merch stores were just not what they are now. So yeah, a lot of merch buying at the shows is where I got most of my wardrobe. But yeah, I still think that's a good album. Bleeding Through just did a 20-year show for that just last year in Anaheim at the House of Blues. Unfortunately, I had to miss that one. But yeah, I have seen them a lot. I'm pretty sure I saw them play their quote-unquote final show like 10 years ago at the Glass House in Pomona. But man, I've seen them at House of Blues in San Diego here. I've seen them at festivals and stuff. Like, yeah, well, I think I have. I don't know. I've seen them a lot over the years, but yeah, definitely a big one. Great album. This Is Love, This Is Murderous. Even The Truth, their next, I mean, you know, I'm into music at this point, but like their next album, The Truth, also very heavy, pretty sick album. But that album in particular, definitely a big one for me personally as a young person. And yeah, I don't know. I think it was big in the scene. In my opinion, it was, but whatever. Anyway, that is Bleeding Through at number 10. Okay, moving on to the up the list, I guess. Number 9. This band, actually, I probably could have ranked in like the top 3 just in terms of how nostalgic they really are for me. But I didn't... they never, like, I don't know. They did not impact me personally that much, but they were, when I hear the name or whatever, it just really brings me back to the very early days of music. Well, this kind of music for me. And that is a band called Zao, Z-A-O. I'm sure metal heads and metal fans of music, y'all know them, obviously, but... yeah, this band really was one of those bands that was like, they were already pretty big in the scene at this time, like when I found out about them. They had been around for a few years already. They had put out albums, you know, a couple albums, I think, by the time I actually found out about them. Because they were playing in like, yeah, the 90s. So yeah, they had some music out by the time I had found out about them. But they really remind me of the first, you know, couple Burn CDs that my friend gave me. In particular, for them, was the Splinter Shards, The Birth of Separation. That album was very big. That was the main album, I guess you could say, that we listened to. Again, just because of distribution, whatever, that wasn't their first album. They had other albums out after that, but... like by the time I found out about them, but for whatever reason, the Splinter Shards, I can remember that writing on the CD, the Burn CD, the Splinter Shards, The Birth of Separation. But that was the one we really connected to. So, this one I actually have as like a twofer, I guess you could say. I have two bands listed at this number 9 spot because purely because I saw them both together at a show. And so, I mean, they're both early bands, but so I have Zao, but then I also have right next to them another band straight out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, called The Agony Scene. They were another band that their first album, which is just a self-titled album or whatever, I was... I'm not going to say obsessed, but I was a big fan of, I'll put it that way. And the Agony Scene actually did play in slow once or twice, maybe at Slow Brew. But my friend Stuart and I, Stuart, the one who's been featured on this podcast a couple times, he and I actually went to, we took the Amtrak train from San Luis Obispo up to, where was this? Sacramento, maybe? It might have been to Sacramento to go see Zayo and the Agony Scene together. And if you remember this band, Fear Before the March of Flames, they were all playing a show at the Orange Vale Boardwalk. And I can't remember if that was in, like, was that in Sacramento? It was somewhere up there. Might have been Folsom. I don't know. We had some friends in Folsom, which is kind of near Sacramento-ish. But I can't remember exactly where that venue was. It was one of those Northern California cities. But we saw Zayo and the Agony Scene together. And that was the only time I've ever seen Zayo, if I can remember correctly. And this is like probably 2000, I don't know, 4, 5, or 6, somewhere in there, that we did this trip. Maybe 2004 or 5. I don't think it was as late as 2000. Okay, I'm getting off track. But that was the only time I ever saw Zayo that I can remember. And it was just another big band between him and I in our early days. So to see them and the Agony Scene together was really cool. And to just travel for a show and go to a new venue, which, you know, are all things I'm into, was a lot of fun. And yeah, that was a good show. I remember that one being pretty, it was a rowdy, it was a fun show. But yeah, the Agony Scene, their first album, self-titled or untitled, whatever you want to call it. And then Zayo, The Splinter Shards. And we listened to other Zayo albums, All Else Failed, and I don't know, maybe Funeral of God, but that was like later. But yeah, for whatever reason, Zayo in particular, that album really brings me back. You know what I mean? And I'm going to say that a lot probably throughout this, but it's true, damn it. So whatever. So yeah, I had them at number 9 and them together purely because we saw them at a show together. So that is Zayo and yeah, the Agony Scene. Whew, okay, all right, we're cruising. We still got 8 fucking bands left. Okay, great. Oh, I'm not out of breath. Here we go. All right. For number 8, I put another band from the OC, Orange County, Southern California. Another what I would consider to be a classic kind of legacy hardcore band, and that is this band called Throwdown. If you know, Throwdown was basically like, I don't know, I don't want to say post, it was like an old school hardcore band, traditional hardcore, even though they were like, I don't know, the next generation of that. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but Throwdown is like a legendary, in my opinion, hardcore band. And they were one of the early just straight hardcore bands that I got into, because, you know, Bleeding Through, that's like, whatever, metalcore, whatever you want to call it. Same with the Agony Scene. But Throwdown is a little more of like an old school traditional hardcore band. And they were one of the early, if not maybe the first, kind of early actual hardcore band that I got into. It doesn't matter, but we listened to them a lot. In particular, again, this album, 2003, Haymaker, classic Throwdown album, very famous album, in my opinion. Again, I don't know if these are just my opinions or if this is actually, like, you know, universally kind of agreed on, but Haymaker is like a legendary hardcore album, in my opinion. You Don't Have to Be Blood to Be Family, and their first album, which again is like a classic album, it's called Beyond Repair. So many hits off of that album. Great album. And of course, you know, Throwdown, they represented the straight edge scene, which of course we were straight edge. I mean, we still are, but like we were straight edge kids, you know, we were big into the music, and to have Throwdown, a hardcore straight edge band that was like actually pretty popular was like, I don't know, very cool to us. And I mean, it made us like them more and stuff. And their shows were like famously, I don't know, hard, you know what I mean? Like a lot of tough guy kind of, you know, bro down type crowds. But yeah, they played in San Luis a few times. I definitely saw them once at Slow Brew downtown. This is old school Slow Brew for, you know, all the locals out there, on Garden Street, right next to the alleyway there. It's like a hotel or like, no, it's a restaurant now or something. I don't know, but this is old school Slow Brew, Garden Street, San Luis Obispo. I saw Throwdown there once, and then if I remember correctly, they played at Trinity Hall, which, you know, shout out to the local scenesters out there. Trinity Hall was like, and I mean, it's almost like out of town. It's way out Edna Valley kind of area. I think that's what the area is called. I don't know, but it's not like in the city. It's like on the outskirts of the city, but they used to have shows there, which I saw some cool shows there. But I'm pretty sure I saw Throwdown play at Trinity Hall once. But yeah, they were very fun shows, very lively, you know, is what I'll call it. But yeah, Throwdown always brings me back. And they just put out the 20-year, like a 20-year pressing of Haymaker on vinyl. And it's really cool, commemorating 20 years of that album. It's crazy to think it's been 20 years. But yeah, Throwdown, another great hardcore band. SoCal, all that stuff, straight edge. Love them. Gotta love Throwdown. So, I had them at number 8, even though, you know, the list is, the order is kind of arbitrary, but, yeah, I'm putting them at number 8. Okay. All right. We're cruising here, man. We're doing the damn thing. All right. Moving on to the next. So number 7 is, this might be a controversial pick because of kind of the direction they took over the years. Well, not the direction they took, but they had some trouble in their later years, I guess you could say. And, but I don't know. Hindsight is, you know, 2020 or whatever, but it doesn't matter anyway. Okay. Number 7, I have San Diego metalcore legends As I Lay Dying. This band, again, huge, and they really bring me back to the early days. In particular, again, another 20-year album that came out in, well, 2003, so it's just over 20 years, but which I would consider their like first big album. It's called Frail Words Collapse. You all know that album, right? Like, let's be real. Absolutely, like, when this album came out, I mean, it was huge. And I remember when this album was new and it came out. But yeah, As I Lay Dying always reminds me of high school and just the early days and being completely blown away, because y'all know 94 Hours, like, it's an intense song. I mean, the whole album is sick, but I mean, Forever, like, I mean, iconic song in the scene, in my opinion. And yeah, they definitely remind me of early days in music, being in high school, being blown away by how fast the drums were, and just his vocals were sick. And yeah, they definitely take me back. And they played in Slow too. When did they play at? I think they played at, did they play at Trinity Hall too? They either played at, it was Trinity Hall, I think, actually. They played there, and they ended up playing Slow Brew again later. But, yeah, I mean, especially after moving to San Diego, like, they were still pretty big around here. I've seen them a bunch over the years, Warp Tours. I've seen that Soma in San Diego before. But then, I mean, again, this is what I was going to bring up. As you may or may not know, their singer had a little, you know, some run-ins with the law. He did some prison time, you know? So he went through some shit, and but they still play music, but their reputation obviously is a little bit tarnished because of the nature of his crime, which involved soliciting a hitman and an attempted murder on his estranged wife. So, yeah, a little problematic, you know what I mean? You know, whether you can separate the artist from the art, I'll let you decide that. But before all the drama, they were just a straight up, actually a Christian metal band, if I remember correctly. So yeah, he had a fall from grace for sure. But that album, Frail Words, Collapse, and actually the next couple albums, Shadows Are Security, is really damn good. And even An Ocean Between Us, which this is later, that's 2007 that came out, are really good albums. But Frail Words, Collapse, absolute heat from As I Lay Dying. And yeah, that one, yeah, like, yeah, that one brings me back again. I know I say this, I'm going to keep saying it, but definitely brings me back. So yeah, another good nostalgic band right there. And that's going to be number 7 on my list, San Diego Zone, As I Lay Dying. All right. Okay, so we're moving up the list. We're almost to the halfway point, all right? Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for hanging in there. So number 6 is another metal band, I guess you would say, from Illinois. And this band, I was very big into when they, well, I guess when I found out about them, because it was a little bit after, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember exactly when I discovered these bands, because a lot of them, like, the music was out already, you know what I mean? Like, and then I found out about it, like, a year later, or whatever the timeline was. But this band, yeah, I was definitely big into for a long time. That is none other than Dead to Fall from Illinois. In particular, their first album, Everything I Touch Falls to Pieces, is like, I loved that album. Yeah, that one was hugely popular to me, at least. yeah, I remember, I saw Dead to Fall around this time. It was maybe a couple years later, actually. It's probably around 2005, I'm going to guess. We saw them at this, like, mall. It was called, yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before, I think, even, but it was called the Montgomery Plaza in Bakersfield. And it was, like, a legitimate, like, old mall. And then, but, like, they had, like, a middle area between two. It was like a common area between two, like, halves of the mall or whatever. And they would, like, have shows there, I guess. But I do remember seeing Dead to Fall there once, probably, yeah, 2005-ish, I'm going to guess. So their other album, or their second album, Villainy and Virtue, was already out by then, but which I do like that album too. But in particular, Everything I Touch Falls to Pieces was, like, the big one. That was the one I was, like, hooked on. I feel like I saw them at the Alpine, too, in Ventura. Shout out, Alpine. Another old school venue that no longer exists, that we used to go to quite a lot. But, yeah, Dead to Fall, even though, I mean, I actually did like their third album, The Phoenix Throne. But, and I never got hooked on those two albums as much as I did their first one. And, yeah, that was another band, early 2000s band, that I just I don't know. I think about it, and it brings me back to a time. And yeah, I wasn't really crazy about their last album they did. Are You Serious is the name of the album. They went a direction kind of that I wasn't really crazy about. And then just by that time, though, I was already listening to them less and less already anyway. So it was kind of whatever, you know. But yeah, that first album, though, big hit in my personal life. And yeah, it's that one too. Also, like, if you go back, well, if I go back and listen to that album, like, it just sounds like early 2000s metal. Like, bands nowadays, like, just do not sound like that style and everything. Like, it's a nice little time capsule kind of album, but it's good. And yeah, his voice is very unique, and yeah, I dig it. I like that album. That was a big one for me. So that's gonna be number six, and that is Dead to Fall. All right, now we're getting into the top five here. Well, top five on my list. I mean, they're not really, you know, top five of importance, like I've said, but top five on this list. However, the number five band I'm putting on here actually is, like, a very, I don't know, close, I don't know, band that I still like and I still listen to and that I have a very fond spot for in my heart and in my history. And that is post-hardcore emo band, whatever you want to call them, From Autumn to Ashes, straight out of Long Island, New York. Yeah, this band, again, like, reminds me of just the early scene days. So, like, the skinny jeans, the small shirts, the straightened bangs, you know, like, kind of era, like, just scenester kids. But, yeah, I actually do still love this band, and I've seen them a few times over the years. If I'm tripping, did they play at Slow Brew? I think they did play at Slow Brew once, but it was, like, later, like, after the singer had left, and the drummer, Francis, became the singer of the band. I think I didn't see them until then. I mean, I've seen them a couple times over the years, but yeah, that one, them in particular, though, like, I still actually do like this band. So their first album, Too Bad You're Beautiful, is, again, I think, like, a great, like, scene stir kind of album, especially the closer on that album, Short Stories with Tragic Endings, is, like, that opening riff. I mean, it's just, like, it's one of those ones you hear, where it's just, like, I don't know, you get hyped, you know what I mean? And it was, like, it was just such a big song, and, like, that album is, I mean, it's good, I don't know. And then even their next album, actually, I like quite a lot, too. That is The Fiction We Live. That one came out in 2003. Actually, their singer was on the next album, too, but that one is sick. The After Dinner Payback, I mean, come on, dude. Straight banger right out of the gate. There's a lot of, I even like The Fiction We Live, like, the title track, just the little acoustic, like, that's a great album. But I actually do like all of their albums. Like, they put out two more albums after that, Abandon Your Friends in 2005, and then Holding a Wolf by the Ears in 2007. And that one didn't even have the original singer on it. But they're all good. So, I mean, I genuinely like this band all the way through. But in particular, those first two albums, again, those first two albums came out when I was in high school, 2001 and 2003. And to me, those are, like, the classic scene years of that band, and just all of the bangers of their, like, all the big hits, in my opinion, of course, from their discography or whatever, are off those two albums. And very nostalgic albums for me, but I still listen to them all the time. like I still actively listen to this band. So yeah, love From Autumn to Ashes always brings me back. I had the shirt with the maple leaf on it, if you remember, back in the day. Like, that was one of their like logos, was just like the maple leaf with the script across it. Yeah, like, yeah, I don't know. I love them. From Bottom to Ashes, that's number five on this list. Classic, still love them, all that stuff. Okay. All right. Whew, okay, here we go. Number four. Yeah, damn, this is a good list. Like, this really does, I don't know, it does bring me back, but all right. Number four, another classic metal band, I guess you could say, and this one definitely was in on like the ground floor for me, meaning like they already had music out by the time I got into music, so I could go back and listen to their catalog that was already out. And that is, I don't know what you want to call it, metal. I just call them metal, I guess. A band called Darkest Hour from Washington, D.C. Yeah, damn. This one brings me back. So, in particular, album-wise, So Sedated, So Secure, and Hidden Hands of a Saddest Nation, those were the big ones. Like, they had an earlier release before those that I remember listening to, but like that's not the one that stuck, you know what I mean? So Sedated, So Secure, listened to all the time, and then Hidden Hands was another like big one, I guess, even though I liked their albums after that. Undoing Ruin, like, what did I just go to? I saw an Undoing Ruin anniversary show. Was that just last year? Maybe 2 years ago? Maybe it was a 15-year show, maybe? I don't know. I saw some anniversary tour where they played the whole album, and, like, that's a great album. Like, I like that album. Deliver Us, the album after that, also very good. And then, see, now we're getting kind of in the point where I didn't keep in touch with them. I didn't keep track of them as much, so, like, I just started listening to other bands, and I was so far removed then from like their earlier stuff, you know, that I had moved on or whatever. I mean, I won't say I moved on. I still like, I just went and saw their show, but like, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, Darkest Hour brings me back to the day when I was starting all this, but it's really just those two albums in particular that are the ones that I remember. And I think I actually owned these CDs. I think I remember buying these CDs because, like, once I started getting into music and then buying CDs and I could find them, I would buy them instead of burn them. And I'm pretty sure I remember having this on actual, like, I purchased this disc. I didn't just have, you know, some bootleg, you know, burned copy of it. But, yeah, they're still an active band. Like, I've seen them. They played at Slow Brew, I remember for sure, at least once. And then I've seen them a few times now over the years. I've seen them at Brick by Brick here in San Diego at least twice that I can remember. Once at Slow Brew. Yeah, I might have seen them somewhere in the meantime, but I don't know. I can't remember. But yeah, definitely an early band that, yeah, I got into. So that's going to be number, what number is that? Four? Yeah, we're going to call that number four. okay, now we're getting into the top three. And though, like, I don't know. I mean, these are definitely top three, I guess you could, not necessarily. I don't know. I keep flip-flopping, whatever. I'll never make up my mind, but fucking who cares? Let's just talk about them. So, okay, well, number three is actually the band that, you know, started this whole idea for me doing this podcast, which is Poison the Well. Poison the Well post-hardcore band, I guess you could call them. From, where are they from? Miami? Florida? Yeah. From Florida. And, yeah, it's like, so, fuck, I don't even know where to begin, but they were one of those bands that already had music out, and not only that, it's like a straight up just iconic album. That is 1999's The Opposite of December. I mean, this is like a staple album of the genre. I mean, it is so damn good. And me and my friends, like particularly Stu, just played this album nonstop, man. It is so damn good. It is truly like a staple of the genre. If you have not listened to The Opposite of December by Poison the Well, just honestly stop listening to, well, maybe finish this first and then go listen to it, but just listen to it like as the next thing you do, like after this, just listen to it. It is absolutely like a phenomenal hardcore album. It's so good, so catchy. I mean, Nerdy, that I, to me, again, that's like one of like the staple songs of the scene. I mean, it's just, it's so good. The lyrics are great. The whole album is good. And yeah, Poison the Well just always reminds me of like when I was just getting into heavy music and I only knew like five bands, like Poison the Well was one of them. And so unique. Again, Jeff, like his voice is so distinct, so unique. This band does not sound like anyone else. And yeah, they are just so damn good. And I'm so stoked I got to see that show earlier this year. And yeah, Poison the Well, just, I had a shirt from them too off of, I think it was from Interpunk, that one. I think that's where that's where I bought a lot of my shirts back in the day before like that shows in Interpunk. Y'all remember Interpunk? I don't know. But this band, I'm bummed I did not see them kind of back in their actual like heyday prime, which was like the early 2000s. But that show this year was phenomenal. So I'm like, it's all good. They actually, even their album after Opposite of December, Tear from the Red, that was 2001 or 2002 was Tear from the Red, another great album. I listened, you know, like, it's hard to, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know how you like you hear an album from a band and it's so good that you just become obsessed with it, and then when they put out like their next album, like it's almost impossible to live up to like what that first album was, at least to you. I mean, maybe for the band, you know, like they were happy or whatever, but like for me personally, you know, like you connect so much with one album that it's like basically impossible for the next album to like make that kind of impact on you. That's kind of like, I get into that a lot with a lot of bands, like the first band I'm going to talk about here, and then, you know, like Set Your Goals and like other bands that like their first album is so damn good that like it's just you know. So like I didn't give Tear from the Red enough love. I listened to it and I liked it because it's Poison the Well, but it wasn't until honestly like more recent years, just in my, I don't know, adult life, I guess you could call it. I mean, technically I'm an adult, but even though I'm in this like weird state of just arrested development, you know what I mean? Physically and technically and legally I'm an adult, but that I really like began to appreciate Tear from the Red and even You Come Before You more. Cause at the time it was just like, for me, it was like Poison the Well was The Opposite of December. Like that was it. Like if I wanted to listen to Poison the Well, I was just going to put on that album. It was my favorite album. I think it's their best album, or like, you know, like at the time I thought, you know, so I'm like, I'm just going to listen to that album every time. But it wasn't until more recent years where it's like, okay, now that I'm like a little more open, a little more open-minded, a little more patient, that I'm like, I'll actually listen to some of these albums and then be like, oh damn, this is actually really good. And like, they were actually a little more artistic than I like, I don't know, could even understand back then. Cause you know, I was all about the breakdowns and you know, whatever. But then it's like, you know, you get older and you read the lyrics and you're like, kind of you know, understand like the experimentation of the music, and you're like, oh, this is actually really fucking, they're just smarter than I was, you know what I mean? That's really what it comes down to. But but anyway, not to get too sidetracked, but yeah, Poison the Well, very special place in my heart, very early band for me, one of the like I said, probably top three or five of the first hardcore bands that I actually heard and got into. So yeah, I'm really hoping they do another like anniversary tour for Opposite of December, because that would be amazing. And yeah, I don't know, love Poison the Well, so happy I got to see them. And yeah, they absolutely rule, so go listen to Poison the Well. All right, cool. All right, here we go. We're coming down to the wire here. Thanks for hanging in there. Thank you for your patience, honestly. Yeah, it's been a while since I've done a solo podcast, I feel like. I've had people, yeah, for the last few, I think. I don't know. And this was one that I, like I said, I just thought of after seeing that show. And I was like, oh, that'd be kind of cool to talk about, like, the early bands, you know? And, like, I don't know. It's been a while, I feel like, since I've just sat down and spoken to my wall in my apartment. So yeah, this is, I don't know, if you're listening to this and you've actually made it this far, honestly, thank you so much for listening to it. And I hope you like this music, or maybe you'll get something recommended, or you'll check something out. I don't know, but yeah, just, I don't know, thanks for listening to me is what I'm trying to say. So all right, whoo, here we go. Okay, number two. Now, again, I put this band at number two just because of like their instant nostalgia for me, but they're not necessarily like the number two most significant band, you know, to me or whatever, but they are almost like the epitome in my head of, like early hardcore bands that like kind of led me into the music. Like, they're like a transitional kind of, you know, you know, when I was transitioning, you know what I mean, from a little punker kid into like a more hardcore kind of focused human being, that this band like was a nice way to bridge the gap. And yeah, that is post-hardcore legends. I consider them one of the, you know, they've been in it for so long now. And that is a band from Canada. Where are they from? Ontario? Ontario, Canada, called Alexis on Fire. Yeah, like I remember, it's all like, again, I can remember having the burned CD of their self-titled album and thinking like, we used to call it, oh, Alex is on Fire. You know what I mean? Or like, oh, is it Alex is on Fire, or is it Alexis on Fire? You know, like we would do that whole thing. You know what I mean? But God, I can still picture the handwriting of this burned CD in my car, in my little CD holder. Like, it's just so crazy. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Zayo, Alexis on Fire, shout out to another band, Killing the Dream. Like, I had, and just a couple, the Hope Conspiracy. There's a couple bands that I had burned CDs of that I can still picture the handwriting on the CD and how it was written and what color it was. This was in blue ink, like blue Sharpie ink, Alexis on Fire. It's just weird that you remember these things. But yeah, they, like, I give them a lot of the credit because that their first, like, I don't know, untitled, self-titled, whatever you want to call it, album is just so damn good. And that fucking, that opening guitar riff, you all know it. Like, it's just so recognizable. Then all the cymbals come in. Like, I just, I hear that, like, that riff or that opening, and I'm just, like, instantly transported back into my first car wearing like Dickie shorts and like long, I had long Beatles mop top, you know, like I just, I don't know, it's just the weirdest thing. Like, I'm just, that opening riff alone just takes me right back to it. It's one of those songs. It's like a transportive sweater. Like, it's just all those things. You know what I mean? So I've actually only seen Alexis on Fire once live, and that was like pretty recently. That was maybe 2022, was that show? It was either 20, was it, wasn't last year? I think it was 2022. I'm going to guess. They headlined a show at Soma here in San Diego. And yeah, just for whatever reason, over the years, I had never been at a show, or like they had been somewhere near enough to where I could go see them. And it was cool to see them. But again, it's one of those situations where I'm like, it was so far after, like, I was like super into them, that they didn't really play anything off that first album, you know? So I'm kind of like, if only I would have seen them back then when that was their new material or whatever. But like, it was still great to see them, and it still brings me back. And like, I still, I feel like I owe them a lot, just because they're like, so they have like, you know, screaming and like stuff in their music, but like, it's not super heavy. It's, again, that's like post-hardcore. So it's like, it's a little more like, I don't know, it's not just straight up breakdowns and two-step, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a little more instrumental, a little more experimental, a little more melodic. They have the clean sing. You all know Dallas Green, right? City and Color. They've got him doing like the clean vocals. So there's a lot of clean, you know, choruses and like harmonies and stuff. So they're not just straight up heavy music. So that's why I think they're like a good like gateway, because they kind of went from like, you know, they bridged that gap without just going straight like death metal, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking Suicide Silence or something. You know, it's like they're a little more accessible. And I don't know, very nostalgic for sure. And I love that first album, and I actually did like Watch Out, and I like Crisis, which were the next two albums they put out. But yeah, that first album in particular, that was the one that really got me into it. And that was 2002 when that first album came out. So love that album. Even the cover, you know, with the schoolgirls or whatever with the switchblades, it's just stuff like that where I'm like, it's burned into my brain, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's so nostalgic for me, and it's such like an iconic kind of moment and era in my life and in the music, my life in the music scene or whatever. So I give Alexis on Fire a lot of props for doing that for me. But again, something had to come before they did, and that is where we are going next on the number one, baby. That's right. Okay, I'm just collecting my thoughts here, collecting my breath here. And again, this band is like, they're special to me, but they're not like in my favorite, you know, like I wouldn't probably put them in my top 10 favorite bands, but it's just like what they did for me. You know what I mean? I can remember like, well, I'll get into it, but like, I feel like I build the suspense up way too much, so I'm just going to say it. Again, this is my number one. This band is the one that really sent me down the rabbit hole. Southern California natives, just like your boy here, straight out of, I don't know, Orange County, I guess. Yeah, OC area, whatever. And that is the Metal Kings or whatever. The band named Atreyu. That's right. Just to, you know, to put some context here, I can remember the moment I found out about this band. again, Stuart, shout out my BFF Stu. Owe him a lot again for basically telling me about all these bands. But I can remember, like, I don't know, shortly after I met him, he and I were talking on AOL Instant Messenger, like on desktop computers. AIM, yeah. And he knew I was into music already because I would wear, like, you know, band shirts when we would hang out, but like Boxcar Racer and Finch and, like, you know, those kind of band shirts. And yeah, he had known about some of these bands from, like, other people, or, like, you know, other people he knew, I guess. I think it was one of our friend's brothers, actually, older brother, that told him about this band. But anyway, I remember he and I, so he knew I was into music. That's the point I'm trying to make. But yeah, he and I were talking on AIM one night, and he was like, oh, have you ever heard, I know you're like, you like music or whatever, have you heard this band Atreyu? And I had never heard of them. So I was like, oh no, what is, you know, Atreyu, what is that? And he was like, yeah, it's like, you know, they're heavier, you know, they're like a, kind of like a heavier band, but I think you might like them. And he sent me a song, if I remember, and it was one of the singles off that album. It might have been the, was it the big single? They had a couple of hits off that album. Well, I mean, they're all hits to me, but like, called Ain't Love Grand. And if you know that song, it's, you know, it's got a clean chorus, and it's not too heavy. So it's kind of like a good, again, like middle ground song. And he was like, oh, I think you might like it. It's, you know, it's catchy or whatever. But again, I had never heard music with like that kind of vocal style, like metalcore vocals or whatever, like screaming, like, gotta like, you know, like, you know, like that kind of style. Like, until this point, I'd been listening to just bands that were punk, but they still sing. So that was like my first exposure to like metalcore vocals, where people are actually like yelling or whatever the words. And so I remember thinking, like, okay, like, well, this is heavier than I'm used to as far as vocal style. But that song, if you know, it's like a catchy, it's an upbeat song. The guitar riffs in that one are pretty sick. And so I was like, okay, like, I'm into this. I like kind of the heavy, kind of like edgy vibe it has to it. So I'll like pursue this more. And if you know that, so that album, or that song, I guess, rather, is from their first album. They have another one before that, but I don't know if that's just an EP or demos or what. Fractures, you know that one? Fractures in the Facade of Her Porcelain Beauty. Yeah, emo, I know, right? But this was actually their first full-length, like proper full-length album, Suicide Notes and Butterfly Kisses, which is, yeah, that is the album I consider that like completely just changed the trajectory of my, well, I mean, to say my life, it just sounds dramatic, but it is kind of true, because it's like, that's what took me into this music scene, which I then eventually really just went all in. So, I don't know, but that album's amazing. So, well, in my opinion, it's amazing. I know everything I say is my opinion, but like, you know what I mean. So, yeah, Suicide Notes and Butterfly Kisses. That one came out in 2002. And, yeah, after I heard that first song, Ain't Love Grand, then, you know, it's like, okay, I like this. I'll go check out the album, listen to the album. And, I was absolutely just hooked, and being hooked led into just straight up obsession. That album, I had memorized front to back. Like, I listened to it nonstop on repeat all day, every day. You can always tell, like, if I look at, if like you see an old picture of me, basically from like 2003 to 2005, pretty much, I'm wearing an Atreyu zip up hoodie that said Live, Love, Burn, Die across the front, said Atreyu on the back. Yeah, I was absolutely just obsessed with that album. And I still think to this day, it is a great album. Very sentimental for me. Has a, you know, very special place in my heart, because it's the album that really changed the direction for me, like my musical direction or whatever. I saw Atreyu once live that I can remember. Was it only once? I saw them at Warped Tour, like in the later years of Warped Tour. So it was probably 2017, 16, or 18. I don't think it was, maybe it was the last one. I don't know. It was the last couple years of Warped Tour. It wasn't until then that I saw them live, but it still had Alex as the singer. He's their original singer. He's no longer in the band anymore. So it was good to see him, at least with the band. And I mean, they still played Lip Gloss in Black, which, you know, is another straight up banger from the album. You know, it's the closing track, sick ass guitar intro. It's got the Live, Love, Burn, Die chant at the end. Yeah, that's like one of my all time favorite songs, like ever. So, yeah. It was cool to see them, even though it was, you know, it's Warped Tour, you're outside, the sound is whatever, it's not a full, you know, set, but just the fact that I got to see them at least one time play was pretty rad. And I think that was the only time I ever saw them. I can't remember, but I had, you know, this, it was way later anyway, so I wasn't quite as, you know, invested in them as I once was, but again, for the nostalgia, it was nice to see them live at least one time. And yeah, Atreyu, you know, like, they went a direction in their career or whatever that I just wasn't crazy about. I actually do like The Curse, which was the album after that. But again, it was that same problem where, like, I was so obsessed with the first album, and I think it's so good that it was like, when I heard The Curse, you know, I was like, just let down instantly, because I was like, I already don't like this as much as the first one, you know, even though I'll still put that one on every once in a while, like to this day, and I still like, I'm like, okay, like this is fine, it's whatever. But you can tell they were changing their direction, and then they would continue to go that route, like especially in their next couple albums. And we had seen this too, which, again, this is another shout out to an early band, not to go too off track here, but Avenged Sevenfold. If you believe it or not, their first album was actually like straight metal, and it's called Sounding the Seventh Trumpet. Loved that album, but then they went to like Waking the Fallen after that, and they were kind of going like a more radio rock kind of direction, and like we were just like, you know, whatever, fuck this, fuck them, like, bunch of sellouts or whatever. I mean, they were, like, the epitome of that to us. Atreyu, their change was a little more gradual, but they still kind of went that direction, which I wasn't that crazy about. So, basically, after The Curse, I mean, I liked the album after that, A Death Grip on Yesterday, but that one is where I'm like, there's like a couple songs on here. I'm not crazy about the album as a whole. And then after that, I just pretty much stopped listening, honestly. But what was done, you know what I mean? And, Suicide Notes had made its impact on me. And, regardless of what they did later on in their career, you know, I'm like, I feel like I owe that band so much for just being like the ultimate, for me, gateway into hardcore music, into metal, into metalcore, into just heavier music in general. And, you know, you look back on the lyrics, yeah, they're pretty emo, you know, it's a lot of like, I'm mad at a girl and I'm mad at the world, you know, kind of stuff, but it's just, it's burned into my soul, you know what I mean? And so it's so nostalgic for me that, yeah, I still think that album is great. I still love singing to it. I still love listening to it. And, yeah, man, that one just, that was the one. So they had to be number one for that reason. Cause, that's like, there's other bands I feel nostalgic about, you know, that bring me back to that era, but they were the ones, like, if it wasn't for Atreyu, I might not have ever listened to Alexis on Fire or Poison the Well, you know, or Unearth or, like, Bleeding Through or any of these other bands. So, Yeah. That's my number one most nostalgic band. So, whew, all right. I think that's everything I have to say. I don't know. I'll probably think of something as soon as I stop, but that's what happens every time I do any podcast, you know? All the best stuff happens off the... I feel like it's like... I don't know. I'm sure I'll think of something, but yeah. Anyway, there you have it. That's a little trip down... Well, a kind of little trip down memory lane for me. And these heavy bands that I grew up listening to and grew up loving and, yeah, made a big kind of impact on me and have lasted, you know, 20 plus years later now and are still in my, you know, music rotation. So, yeah, I don't know. I wish there was some way we could talk about this with, you know, like comment or whatever. I'll have to figure that out sometime so people can, like, get in there and start, you know, we can have a... make it a thing, a discourse, you know what I mean? But anyway, whatever. Now I'm just rambling. Thank you so much for listening. Also, this is episode 25, which is pretty crazy. Kind of like a milestone, kind of, I guess. I mean, it's like 20. That's a nice, you know, round number. Is that a round number? Does that to be even to be round? Or does it mean like the numbers, the digits themselves are actually... I don't know. But yeah, this is episode 25. So I cannot thank you enough, the listeners, for listening to them, for downloading them, for streaming them, for telling your friends, whatever. Just thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who has been on this podcast so far, for the time and everything. I honestly, like, yeah, I don't know how often I'm going to do this, but just hang in there. They're coming. Just, yeah, I don't know. Thank you so much for listening. And, hey, we'll catch you on the next one. All right. Okay, cool. I'm out of here. Catch you later. Peace.